Welcome to Bruderhof Radio, an independent production broadening the bounds of discourse on progressive thought and action.
We're using war on drugs as a pretext to feed weapons for political purposes to crush what Central Intelligence perceives as the opposition to the American way, when in fact we're supporting the destroyers of the American life. I think probably the biggest danger to America and our democracy at this point in our history is the CIA itself.
This week on Bruderhof Radio, an interview with former federal agent Mike Levine. Levine served with the Drug Enforcement Agency for 17 years until 1990. During the 1980s, the Drug Enforcement Agency acknowledged Levine as one of their best agents. But despite his years of witnessing and taking part in the drug war, Levine now spends his time telling people about its failures. Early in his career as a federal agent, Levine began to see how politicians and bureaucrats lied to the American people and taxed them billions of dollars to fight a losing battle. Calling it the highest kind of treason imaginable committed by a government against its own people, he eventually decided that he had to expose the fraud inherent in the drug war. One thing I'm interested in, and hopefully in the show we can get to some specific examples a little later, but I'm interested in the role of the CIA and other agencies such as the DEA and the ATF in the forming of United States policy, both domestic and foreign. It seems to me that almost every major problem, or what I would see as a problem in this century, came from some sort of government or CIA bungling. I mean, we can think of the Bay of Pigs and almost every country in Central America. What's your take on that?
Well, I wrote an article called Spies Who Shagged Us, you know, kind of tongue-in-cheek, but based on fact, you know, comparing Central Intelligence and other covert agencies to Austin Powers. It's only a miracle that they haven't gotten us into a nuclear war. And this isn't just my judgment. This is the judgment of people hired by Central Intelligence, whom I allude to, whom I quote in the article, who said that they are inept, that they are the tail that wags the dog, that they should be revamped, redone, and our government, our elected protectors, instead of, you know, tearing them apart and rebuilding them so that they serve the American people instead of themselves, and dangerously so, has just given them more money with every problem that they, and I list all the problems, like Alder James, their counterintelligence expert from who was alleged to fight the Russians for 8 years, the head of that effort, and he in actuality was working for the KGB in all that time. And their failure to recognize the fall of communism in Russia, which is kind of bizarre, and them bombing the Chinese embassy after they looked the other way while the Chinese got all our nuclear secrets. Which is probably one of the dumbest moves ever done by any intelligence agency in history. It's just so awful. Their own judgment about the Bay of Pigs and Vietnam, wherein it was their lies, they lied to the presidents, their ineptitude, their ego, their belief that they were Austin Powers, that almost brought us into nuclear conflagrations several times already. And I think probably the biggest danger to America and our democracy at this point in our history is the CIA itself, and I am a court-qualified expert.
Mike, it's clear from your long history of service, I guess we would call it, for this variety of secret agencies, that what you've mentioned, the sort of the ego that goes on in there, could you describe that a bit? It seems that maybe everyone who works for these agencies gets the feeling that they're invincible, that they're outside of the law. Is that maybe what propagates these large mistakes?
Sure. My sense of it is, and I've seen it, is that each of them, each of Central Intelligence people, for instance, and a lot of federal agents are given a badge and the credentials, and they somehow believe themselves to have ascended to some sort of godlike status. In fact, I based the book Triangle of Death on a real conversation that I took part in Buenos Aires, Argentina, in 1979, wherein a CIA officer said that, to Argentine secret police, who were then busily killing off anyone who was anti-government, that America should be more like Argentina. And as I detailed in Triangle of Death, he then proceeded to show how it could be done in America, that by creating some, by a scare, for instance, he said, you know, a terrible drug, America would ask for their constitutional rights to be taken away. And that actually happened during the Bush administration when crack was first recognized as the scourge that it is and all of that stuff that the media is telling us. The American people showed in a poll that 60% of us wanted, would be willing to give up constitutional rights to win a drug war that really doesn't even exist. And Central Intelligence actually took that as a mandate. And, of course, when we wrote Triangle of Death, the first thing that happened was mysteriously an ISBN number, which is the Social Security number, more or less, of a book, a false one appeared in every computer in the country, which acted like an invisible Pac-Man. If you ordered the book, it would go into the computer and never be delivered. And it took us 10 months to realize that they had actually destroyed the distribution of the book. And if anyone thinks I'm not telling the truth, if you can get hold of a soft cover version of Triangle of Death and take it into any library and compare it to this huge volume called Books in Print, and you will see that Triangle of Death is the only book that has a different ISBN number in the book than the one listed in Books in Print. Now that you can't argue with.
Mike, have you been targeted in any other ways by government agencies because of your outspokenness?
Well, it's very difficult for them to target me other than physically, which I don't think they will do because so many Americans, it's a strange paradox. You know, Americans believe that if I'm telling the truth, I should be dead, which probably keeps me alive. You know, why kill me? As far as my credibility goes, well, the Justice Department in a New York Times article, June 16th, 1986, called Acting on a Deadly Stage, called me one of their best. Now, and then they, a British writer wrote a book about me while I was still a DEA agent called Undercover by Donald Goddard. And he quotes DEA and government officials again as calling me one of the best. So how do you take that back now? Their best technique now is to ignore that I exist. You know, you don't want to call me before Congress because I'm too credible, and they're doing it quite successfully. In fact, so successfully that when I wrote Deep Cover, it was voted by California University and then presented by Bill Moyers on a national TV show as one of the 10 most censored stories in America.
Mike, we've been talking a little bit about the drug war here already, and that is one of the examples of CIA foreign intervention that I'd like to get into in more detail here. Could you just update us on the current situation in Colombia and the so-called drug war?
We're in there basically under the pretext of fighting a drug war against, and the media is constantly coining this phrase, these narco-terrorists and narco-guerrillas, when in fact, again, I could testify to this in court using specifics, we're supporting the real narco-terrorists and the real narco-guerrillas. And I don't know what more I can say. It's just a continued fraud. It's similar to Vietnam in that we now know that if you listen to mainstream media during the buildup of Vietnam and you just read New York Times headlines and articles where they just, you know, rubber stamped everything the government said, well, we should have won. But the fact is, it was only small media outlets like yours and myself that were telling the truth. Well, the same thing is happening now. You know, we're telling you the truth. We're telling you that American boys are going to die. Billions of American dollars are going to be spent. We can't win when we're supporting people who are already, you know, aiding and abetting the destruction of American youth.
Mike, it's interesting that you compare to Vietnam because that's one thing that we don't see in the mainstream media. They're often quick to point out that this is not a Vietnam, that U.S. troops are not going to be involved. But isn't this what they said at the beginning of Vietnam when they sent the so-called non-combatant advisors over in the 1950s? They very quickly became the combat troops of the 1960s. Is this going to happen in Colombia?
Oh, yeah. Well, not only that. You know, the thing about it is it isn't me that is the first to compare it to Vietnam. The first people to compare it to Vietnam were two Republican senators about 2 weeks ago. And, of course, that never that never got into mainstream media. It was on, I picked it up off the internet, but on the floor of Congress, two Republican senators said precisely that, that this is like, that what the current Clinton administration policy in Vietnam reminds them of is the buildup of Vietnam, and they called it the debacle of Vietnam. And so it's not just me. I mean, you have a case where, you know, mainstream media is kowtowing to the power, whoever's in the White House. Their main aim in life is to sell media, that is to sell newspapers, to get media ratings points. And to do that, they have to have access to the people who are in power at the time. And to get that access, they have to be friendly. So the policy is, no matter how stupid the policy might be, the policy right now is that, you know, we're fighting drugs. And most Americans, if it's not in the New York Times, simply don't believe it's true. And that's very unfortunate, and that is Vietnam being revisited.
Now, caught up in the whole so-called drug war is, in fact, a civil war in Colombia. How much are these things related, and how much are U.S. weapons that are, I guess, earmarked for the drug war, how much are they just being used by the Colombian government to squash the FARC, the main insurgent group in Colombia?
Well, all of it. And the policy is so incredibly stupid, you know, that one of the shows that I did on the expert witness was us giving military weapons, now get this, to the Chinese nationalists. These are the people who gave us Tiananmen Square under the banner of us helping them in the international drug war, you know, to police their borders with drug-dealing countries. Now, everyone involved knows that that's an absolute lie. I mean, we even gave them Humvees, you know, and I wrote an article, I called it Humvees for the Chinese, and it never in mainstream media did anybody point out that, well, what are we going to do if the Chinese invade Burma as part of a drug war invasion, the way we invaded Panama? You know, it's so incredibly short-sighted and Austin Powerish and dumb. And then you have mainstream media talking heads. You know, they kind of remind me of like the dogs on car dashboards with the heads going up and down. You know, like Ted Koppel saying, "Well, of course, you know, the government wouldn't lie," and they probably unbelievable. So most Americans believe that. And as I wrote in The Big White Lie, when Central Intelligence was supporting the right wing in Bolivia, the Bolivian Revolution in 1980, what they were really supporting was the takeover of Bolivia, then the source of virtually all the cocaine on the face of the earth, by drug dealers, you know, who were quote-unquote right-wingers. And they were doing it for political reasons. They said that this is anti-communism. Well, you know, the fact is that the drug dealers were a lot smarter than the CIA. They want to sell drugs, so they'll be anti-communist, whatever it takes to get CIA support and backing. Manuel Noriega did it for 20 years, including having lunch with Bush himself. And it's a continuation of the same policy in South America, and that is that we support the right wing against the left wing. And I'm not politically motivated in any way. I'm not a Republican. You know, I'll vote for anybody who runs for office who says I'm for the American people. You know, I'm not for any of this two-party system, which has brought us, you know, presidents who lie right in our faces, from Bush and Reagan to Clinton. You know, Bush, I didn't know Manuel Noriega was a drug dealer. Reagan, I didn't trade guns for hostages. And Clinton, I didn't have sex with that woman. Then the media, decries anyone who doesn't trust the government. Well, you know, the same thing is happening in Colombia right now. It's just more of an incredible continuity of lies to the American people. We're using war on drugs as a pretext to feed weapons for political purposes, to crush what Central Intelligence perceives as the opposition to the American way, when in fact we're supporting the destroyers of the American life.
You're listening to former Drug Enforcement Agency operative Mike Levine on Bruderhof Radio. To learn more about today's program, Call us at 1-800-778-8461. Are we going to see in a few years some sort of a Pentagon Papers history of the U.S. drug war come out, or did the government learn their lesson not to keep such detailed histories of what they're doing?
Yeah, they've learned. You know, instead of the government getting any better, what they got better at is stomping on so-called whistleblowers, destroying the careers of anybody who comes out to try to defend the American people. This is the paradox that goes on right now. And the paradox is the following. And it's a continuation throughout my career. I took two oaths, one to defend the secrets of a bureaucracy and the other to defend the Constitution and the American people. Immediately, all of us who get in the position where we see top-level events, top-level secret events transpiring, we realize that we can't keep both oaths, that what we're witnessing is the absolute destruction of the Constitution, the absolute endangering of the American people and our way of life. Now, to tell that, we have to violate the other oath. So anybody who's inside has to worry about the destruction of his career by adhering to the oath to defend the American people. Almost everybody who's come out has been destroyed or had to suffer attempts at destruction. And then what they find is they're ignored by media. There's nobody there to stand up for you. There is no American public to stand up for you. The media is thoroughly, and Central Intelligence brags about this in in-house memos, thoroughly controlled by our covert agencies, and you're out there alone. So people wonder why, you know, nobody stands up. And because, as one writer once said, the odds, you have better odds playing Russian roulette than you do becoming a whistleblower in the United States government.
What is the actual extent of the drug war, the physical amount of money and goods that the United States is sending down there? I just saw an item in the paper the other day, I think it was September 1st, that six more anti-drug helicopters were hand-delivered to Colombia by two United States congressmen. Does that sort of thing happen every week?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, yeah, just take a quick count. It cost us $250 million to get Manuel Noriega, who we were supporting. $250 million. And as many as 1,000 lives, including 26 American soldiers, while Manuel Noriega was on the CIA payroll. And everyone knew he was a drug dealer. And immediately thereafter, the drug war was, the drug trafficking condition of Panama had worsened substantially after that. Now, it's easy to say that we have spent during the life of the drug war at this point $1 trillion. Untold numbers of people have died. And all you have to do, without even getting into specifics like that, is look at this massive expenditure, this incredibly long war that is without end. Look on any street corner in America, and it's only worse.
And what is the role of Barry McCaffrey, the so-called drug czar? He just recently went on a tour, I guess you would call it, of Latin America, visited a lot of different countries down in Latin America. What exactly is the drug czar supposed to do?
Yeah, he's the cheerleader for the administration. You know, he mouths all the platitudes. He doesn't qualify in any witness stand in any court in the United States as a drug expert, as none of the drug czars have. He mouths all the platitudes about stopping drugs, even though everyone who studies it knows that it's completely false, and you know, the whole philosophy doesn't work. He's the head talking head. You know, he's the drug war cheerleader, or the equivalent of the March of Dimes poster boy for the drug war. But he serves no other purpose. He has no authority. There's nothing he can do. He's there mainly to convince you, me, and the rest of America that this is the equivalent of the Holy Grail, this war on drugs. And they do a pretty good job of it.
Speaking of cheerleaders, could you comment a little bit on the so-called Partnership for a Drug-Free America? Most people remember them as the people who produced the famous This Is Your Brain on Drug ads with the fried eggs and everything. What's with those ads? Who pays for them, and how effective are they?
Recently, Clinton and Gingrich you know, raising their mutual hands in quote-unquote victory, gave $2 billion to the Partnership of Drug-Free America. For them to distribute to mainstream media for these ads. And $2 billion, that made them the biggest advertisers on Madison Avenue, double of General Motors. And the trouble with that is that all research has shown these ads not only don't work, they're counterproductive. They introduce the thought of drugs to youth who haven't really even thought about it. At the very best, they can show no efficacy whatsoever. Now, a frustrated DEA agent called me on the QT because, you know, I'm just cheaper than a psychiatrist and they know I won't blow their cover and said, Mike, that $2 billion could have bought every coca leaf from every farmer in South America. And the first 60 million was going to people like Disney. I mean, you can see those ads, you know, those kind of ridiculous ads in movies and newspapers. And it's really just the transference of this enormous amount of money to mainstream media. So what happens is, the bottom line of it is, who in mainstream media is going to contest it? Who in mainstream media is going to say anything but that this is the most effective thing to do, when it's an absolute lie? It's kind of mafia-like against the American people. In fact, USA Today, 2 weeks ago, headlined a statistic there's a downturn in the use of drugs, you know, and it called it turning the corner in the drug war. Now, the subtext is, well, the $2 billion is well spent. But, it's such an obvious lie. All they have to do is look back in their own archives, and they'll see that Drugs Czar Bennett 8 years ago had retired in victory for the same exact statistic. You know, it's a statistic that's repeated throughout the history of the drug war. It goes up and down, you know. So they wait for a downturn, any downturn, and they claim victory. But, again, the subtext is that, wow, this $2 billion is well spent, when in actuality, it's a mafia-type robbery with a license. Let me repeat that the Partnership for Drug-Free America, their ads are counterproductive. That is, there's strong evidence that they do exactly the reverse of what they're intended to do. That is, they introduce the thought, they advertise the use of drugs. Although, you know, clearly they claim that they're telling people not to use drugs. But you can't have sports figures, for instance, who everyone knows are doing public service ads between trips to the Betty Ford Clinic and being on parole. And, you know, kids laugh at this stuff. You have to understand that the Partnership for a Drug-Free America now has many people already on retirement. And that if you're an employee of the partnership, you're a new employee, you're not really seriously thinking about ending a drug war. You're thinking about medical benefits that most of America doesn't have, and retirement. It's a wonderful job. You really want to win a drug war? I think the evidence shows absolutely not. And I guess you can sum it all up by saying that most of the people who wear the white hats in the war on drugs are really not the good guys at all. They make a living off the drug war, just the way the drug dealers do.
I noticed on the news the other day that I think 15 more airline workers in Miami airport were...
That's a Xerox pro forma drug story. You know how many arrests like that I've done over the years? Here's the thing about that. Every time the media has called me recently, there's been revelations that Mexico is a bigger threat again, you know, to America, corrupt Mexican government. And so my question to this particular media guy was, well, hold on. How come we voted Mexico a cooperating nation then? You know, could it have anything to do with NAFTA? The media guy's eyes roll up in his head. And he said, well, what about this case, this particular case? And I said, well, this case, if you look back in your own archives, is exactly the same kind of case that your newspaper has printed almost bi-monthly over the last 30 years. All you have to do is change the names, change the dates, change the amounts, but the syntax, the sentence structure, everything is precisely the same. You don't need a comment. You need a Xerox machine. And the danger of what you're doing, and this applies to this airline case, is you're selling the drug war. You're telling America that this war is somehow real. So this airline case, I've taken part in dozens of them, precisely the same over the last 30 years. It's no difference, just the names are different. means nothing. And you'll see more, you know, but I guess the public retention is so short that you think it's a new story. It's precise. And I found, and I documented, going back 80 years, the same identical story. 80 years, long before war on drugs was declared by President Nixon, it sells newspapers. You know, these headlines, but it also sells a completely fraudulent war on drugs. The big mistake media makes is, like court reporters, they go after each new drug war story as if there's nothing, you know, it's brand new. The history is, you know, doesn't even exist anymore. It's, you know, for instance, this USA Today claiming these new statistics as being indicative of we turned the corner in the war on drugs, in spite of the fact that, as I pointed out in my book, turning the corner on the war on drugs is the biggest inside joke in DEA, where they say, I guess we've squared the block again, you know, that's been going on and on. But yet it's headlines in America. And that's unfortunate.
That's all for this edition of Bruderhof Radio, a discussion with former DEA agent Mike Levine. For more information about the topics in today's program, you can call Mike Levine at 212-209-2870. This program was produced by Andrew Zimmerman. Bruderhof Radio is a production of the Bruderhof Communities, a communal movement based on Christ's Sermon on the Mount, in particular the teachings concerning brotherly love and love of enemies, mutual service, nonviolence, and the refusal to bear arms. Money and possessions are pooled voluntarily, and in turn each member is provided for and cared for. For further information about Bruderhof Radio, give us a call at 1-800-778-8461.